You are a busy entrepreneur architect. You're hustling to find the next project, meet with clients, keep the bills paid, and if you're lucky, maybe find some time to design. So how do you continue to learn what you need to know to grow? How do you find the information and the training you need to become more effective, more efficient, more successful? I know you're busy because I too am an entrepreneur architect. That's why we built the Entree Architect membership. On the first Wednesday of every month, we invite an expert into the academy, and they teach us about one specific topic on how to succeed at business. 60 minutes each month, live training and Q&A. Then you can get right back to work. And when you're a member, you gain access to so much more. Unlimited access to business resources, a video library, a private member forum with hundreds of entrepreneur architects just like you. Everything you need to build a better business is available right now at Entree Architect. Subscribe today at entrearchitect.com/join. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you're listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 283. And this week, we're talking about the power of sketching with the co-hosts of the Coffee Sketch podcast, Kurt Neiswender and Jamie Crawley. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, Gusto, easy online payroll, benefits, and HR built for the modern small business. RCAT, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM, specifications, and so much more. And FreshBooks, the cloud-based accounting software that makes running your small firm easy, fast, and secure. Spend less time on accounting and more time doing the work you love. Kurt Neiswender and Jamie Crawley, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Hi, Mark. Great to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be fun because these are two friends that I've known for a long time virtually and occasionally sort of in person. We bump into each other at conferences and things like that. But we've known each other for a long time online. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have this conversation with you guys, because this is another example of making friends and developing relationships via the internet. You know, I've built so many relationships that are real relationships, real friendships over the internet, you know, with people that, you know, I actually haven't ever met in real life, but I have real personal relationships with them. You know, I'm friends with them. If they needed me, if there was an issue in their life and they needed me, I would go to help them. That's the type of relationships we build in this community of architects that we have. And I'm sure that you guys have experienced that. I'm sure that others who are listening have experienced that. It's just part of the time that we're living in. And at this point, it's sort of getting, you know, that's the way life is, that it's not such a surprise anymore, right? That mm-hmm. when we first started doing this, because, you know, we've all sort of experienced, you know, life without that. But, you know, it's just the way it is these days. So I wanted to bring you guys on and have that conversation about, you know, relationships and friendships over the internet and where those kind of things lead. Because you guys have you started a podcast. And I wanted to mm-hmm. talk about that. And because you guys have, you know, I don't know the origin story of the podcast. I don't know if you've met online and became friends or whether you knew each other some other way, but we're going to talk about that. But let's start with origin stories, just like I always do. Let's start with you, Kurt. Let's go back to where you discovered architecture and what inspired you to become an architect. You're both architects. Mm-hmm. and share that story to where we are today. And then we'll go to Jamie and then we'll talk about the podcast and how you got it started and why you got it started and all that good stuff. Maybe we can inspire some other architects to do similar things. So Kurt, what's your story?
Sounds good. I grew up, I was born and raised in Connecticut, Stamford, Connecticut, so East Coast, but to an American father and a Guatemalan mother, my dad wound up meeting her in Guatemala while he was on business doing a lot of Central American work back in the 70s, I guess, at this point. Trying to trace it all back. But my father was originally from California, so I'll get to that in a second. But growing up, I was pretty interested in drawing in general. Comic books, comic book art kind of inspired me to sketch on my own. And then I enjoyed art classes in grade school. And so I would sketch and enjoy art and various crafts or creative things with, you know, using your hands. And then visually, I was a big fan of This Old House. I guess maybe being in the New England area,
yeah,
it was, you know, like the celebrity status or something, you know, for us New Englanders. But so I did watch a lot of This Old House. But it, to me, the most exciting parts of that show was the parts before the finish, right? Before the drywall, the plaster, the materials. It's when you could see the framing, see them working on the mechanical and the electrical and the plumbing. So everything the behind the walls, the skeleton. And it was very fascinating to me as a kid to see how a building went together before, you know, what you can't see now when all the walls are finished. So then, you know, fast forward through grade school, when it came time to apply to college, I really was just filling out the applications and, you know, came time to check the box that said, you know, declare a major. And I kind of looking, I forgot to mention I'm a twin. So me and my twin brother are doing this at the same time. And I remember sitting at the table, looking at my brother and then look at my dad and say, well, I don't know what should I check and
what should I do for the rest of my life?
Right. Yeah. This little box is like the most pivotal moment to my, you know, life at this time. So, I believe my dad suggested, he said, you know, you're seem to be interested in how buildings are go together and you have, you know, some talent in drawing. Why don't you try architecture? And it really kind of came together and I said, okay, check the box. And so coming back to my father, who is originally a Californian, I applied to four schools, Virginia Tech, UT Austin, and USC in Los Angeles. And USC, so it was the farthest one away, but it was a suggestion of my father's, who was alumnus of USC. He said, well, you know, my school is pretty good at architecture. Why don't you apply there? And I said, okay. And I sent in all those applications and I was accepted to all of them. And once I got the acceptance from USC in Los Angeles, this is the warmest place of all the places I applied to. So I'm going to go to the
Having grown up California. In Connecticut. Yeah.
So that's what, you know, what got me out to Los Angeles. So, you know, started in Connecticut, went to school in LA. You know, honestly, the first day of architecture school, the introduction, first day of studio is when I really, you know, made that, when that decision to change or pick that career for my life, path, the first year instructor, Paul Tang, he said, you know, he asked everybody what we thought of what architecture was. And everyone had different answers and no one quite had the answer he was ready to give us. And he said, it's about designing space. It's not about walls, roofs, floors, materials, as much as you're creating space. And then that really kind of threw me for a loop. I was like, wait a minute, you mean the air? You know, the right. Air that's not the everything that's not
in between
physical.
All the other stuff. Yeah.
Right. And that sort of,
I love that.
I don't
air.
Know, philosophical hammer over the head at, you know, the beginning of first year really said, wow, this is really intriguing to me. And I think I'm going to stick with this. And, you know, that was all before all the future all nighters and all that stuff to come. But so that's kind of, and then how far do you want me to go forward to today
where we are today? So how did you get from first year architecture school to where we are now?
Okay, so I made it through 5 years at USC, right? This is probably no surprise, right? I graduated and I stayed in Los Angeles after graduation. So I finished in 03 with my BArch, my 5 year. And then I worked in LA all the way through 2008 when the recession pretty much rocked all of Los Angeles, well, the whole country, but
the whole world.
Everyone, I talked about this before, and I don't want to sound like a horror story, but yeah, you know, everyone in, I was working in a sort of 20 person office, I think maybe down to 15. And then, yeah, at the end, it was right at the end of 2008, the boss basically said, we're out, like, I have no money to pay everybody. And so he laid everybody off. So it wasn't like selective, it just kind of hit just everybody.
Did he close, or did he just sort of go back to his own thing and just let everybody go?
I believe he's still working. And then, but what I think, yeah, he retracted down to whatever he could handle by himself. And then throughout 2009, me and a couple other people would come in from time to time and do a little bit of drawing or 3D modeling. I think, for me, you know, what at least got me some income through 2009 was that I decided, you know, early in my career, I was like, well, I enjoy 3D modeling, and it's something that people, not everybody is doing. And I think that helped me be one of the persons to come back to the office more regularly through 2009. So at least
you became what Seth Godin calls that a linchpin. You became a linchpin. You became the person that everybody needed at that moment.
Yeah. And so that's kind of what I didn't really think of it that way at the time, but I something that was interesting to me. But anyway,
always make yourself indispensable.
Right.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. And then at that time, actually in 2005, I had met my wife, or my future wife, who is from Michigan. And so we met on the beach in LA, which is a very,
very LA-like.
LA-like story. which, you know, the rare times I actually went to the beach. You know, people in LA, like, they're always going to the beach, but you know, when you live out there, it's just there and you don't go as often as you really think you.
Right. Right. It's like me growing up in New Jersey, a half hour from the Statue of Liberty, and having not gone to the Statue of Liberty until I was about 47.
Right. Exactly. Yeah,
I saw it all the time, but I never actually went to it until I was older.
Yeah. And so try and weave this together. So when we met and got married in 2008, and then because of the recession, and she's not an architect, but you know, nobody had jobs. LA is a little expensive to live for younger people. So, and my wife was homesick as well. You know, she said, I kind of had enough of California. You know, what if we just moved to Michigan, closer to my family? Cost of living is a lot lower and all. I think having grown up on the East Coast, did school on the West Coast, and architecture kind of making me more adventurous as far as seeing new places, I said, oh, yeah, sure. Okay, let's give it a go. And honestly, having a strong relationship with her parents, her family, you know, definitely makes it easier to say, oh, yeah, okay, we can move in with your parents for a little while the recession settles itself out. So that's how we bounced. So now we have been in Michigan now for 10 years. And, for the first couple of years, you know, obviously the recession was, well, nationwide and global in its all of its rippling effect. But so Michigan wasn't a hotbed of architecture in 2009, 10, 11. And so I kind of had a couple of odd jobs until I landed where I'm working now at Sedgwick and Ferwetta Architects in downtown Flint, Michigan. And now my wife and I live in Flint and work in Flint, so it's about a mile from home. It's a nice, easy commute. And so that's what I've been doing for the past, let's see, I just passed my 7-year mark at the office. So
congratulations.
Thanks. And that's
where you are now. So
brought you all the way up.
Let's get into the podcast and all of that after we talk to Jamie.
Sure.
And then we'll I've been to Flint. It's actually one of the only places in Michigan that I've been to.
Oh, wow.
When I was a kid, my dad was a Corvette collector. And there was the Corvette, factory was there at the time.
Oh, yeah, right.
And so we visited, it was a National Corvette Restorers Society event there. And he took the whole family there, and we took a tour of the Corvette factory. It was very cool.
Wow.
Made the pilgrimage.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
The Chevy in the Hole. Do you remember that? It was called Chevy in the Hole because it's kind of in a lower elevation area by the river. It's a terrible nickname now.
Yeah, especially when you think of where Chevy went a few years ago. They were literally in a hole. Yeah, I was very young when I did that. I barely remember it, but I know I was there. All right, Jamie, you have 32 seconds.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. You have all the time you need. This is what the show is about. So
I was born. No, actually, it's a lot of people don't know that. I mean, unless they sort of read those internet bios and stuff. But I was actually. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we hear you. Yeah.
Okay. All of a sudden, it's like I looked at Mark and like the mouth was moving and the words weren't coming out. So I, you know.
Yeah, we're good.
It's always those technical difficulties that throw you. But no, actually, a lot of people don't realize because I don't have an accent. But I was born and raised in Montreal. In Quebec, Canada. The part that most people think of as, you know, that sort of bilingual portion of Canada. I mean, the whole country is officially bilingual, but you know, the province of Quebec really you really do get that wonderful sort of European multicultural flavor.
Yeah.
And that was something that I always sort of grew up with. Moved to the United States when I was pretty young, for my dad's job. And he worked for a company that was headquartered originally in Canada, and then became an international company. And their corporate headquarters moved to the U.S. And part of his job, we sort of bounced to areas of quality control that they would move that sort of group around the country. So we started out in Atlanta, Georgia, in the 70s, which was quite a culture shock for Canadians who had never. You know, and mind you, when my folks moved to the U.S., like the whole family, and I'm an only child, it was just sort of the three of us and the rest of the family was still in Canada. But we would, as we moved around the country, we lived in California for a long time. So I kind of grew up on the West Coast, San Jose area, which was fantastic. A lot of good friends that I'm still in contact with there. And I think that experience really, you know, some of those experiences really shaped my sort of worldview. You know, especially because, like I was saying, it was just my parents and myself kind of bouncing around the country. We lived in Nashville for a little while and then eventually ended up in Texas and Dallas. But one of the things that was ever present in my life was that as we moved, which was sort of a constant, we were always in a place that my parents really never knew anything about. And so my mom, you know, my mom only has a high school education, you know, and so I'm the first in my family to go to college. And my dad has a technical degree, that he got at night, and he did very well for himself, you know, in doing that, which always inspired me as well. But it was two things were sort of constant in all those travels. Was one, we had to learn about wherever we were. And so part of that was sort of learning the history and the culture of a place was really important from my mom and dad. They really wanted me as well as themselves, I think, to really kind of know about wherever we were. And some of that led to some, you know, interesting road trips and adventures, and ended up seeing quite a lot of architecture that I didn't realize was going to probably influence me a lot later on in life.
Yeah.
And then the other part was we would always go home. So every summer, you know, our summer vacations, aside from exploring wherever we were, you know, whatever locale we had sort of been moved to because of work, was we would go to Montreal. And so we would spend time with family. And for the architecture folk, if you remember your architecture history class, Montreal has quite an architectural history. There's buildings made Mies van der Rohe, I.M. Pei, Buckminster Fuller, and all of these Moshe Shafti, Habitat, all of these buildings were a backdrop as I was growing up.
And a tremendous history. I mean, it's a colonial city.
Oh yeah. I mean, and just, even just the history itself, and sort of the multicultural history of it all, is amazing. And so it was one where, I was born on the island, in the same hospital my dad was and my grandfather before him. When we would go back in the summers, I would see all these amazing buildings. And I think the art and the culture that my mom really emphasized for me really, really resonated. If there's one other constant is drawing, and I think we'll probably talk about that quite a bit, today, but, I had no architects in the family. So it was something from an origin story of me becoming an architect. That was certainly something that I never even knew what an architect was. So when we ended up in Texas and landed in Texas and it was time to go to college, I wanted to go to art school. Mom and dad said, no, I think, let's get some university behind you. And so then I was, sort of, as Kurt was talking about, the pick the major. And so, I didn't know what, I just figured, well, I got to pick a profession. And so not knowing what an architect was, I picked lawyer. So I actually went to, as a pre-law poli-sci major when I went to college, originally, and that lasted all of one semester.
Yeah, I was going to say, that probably didn't last very long.
Yeah, that lasted all of one semester. And the interesting part of it was, that's how I sort of discovered architecture, was there was a lot of conversations of, I've definitely made the wrong choice. I went to Texas A&M University. I loved the university, but I did not love the degree program I was in, and really didn't know what to do, and was sort of ready to come home, and ended up bumping into a friend on campus who was drawing in a sketchbook, and didn't realize that I was like, oh, well, I didn't know you drew. I draw all the time. I have my sketchbook with me too. And they said, oh, well, this is for class. And I was like, there's a class where you get to draw?
Wow.
Wow. Tell me more about this class.
I have to go back to my law practice classes.
Yeah, I got to go read the law book. Wait a second. Talk politics. No. So that was sort of fortunate. They were taking a class from the associate dean at the time, who did their intro to design. And he's sort of legendary, kind of professor in the College of Architecture at A&M. And she said, oh, well, you need to come over and meet Rodney. I met Rodney Hill. I'm still friends with him, talk to him all the time. And he really, you walk into his office and you see sort of the breadth and depth that architecture can be as a creative outlet. And I was like, yeah, this is totally for me. I don't know if I want to be an architect, but I definitely, this is the place on campus I need to be. And so that's really where it started. And I probably didn't realize that I wanted to be an architect, actually get licensed in practice and sort of have that pursued until, I studied in Europe, in my junior year, knew I wanted to go, more for that sort of cultural exploration and travel. That sort of cemented it, was, sort of seeing that and then spending time with other, other students who were just like me trying to find their way. And those discussions really, I think, really cemented it. And I knew I wanted to be an architect. Did that, graduated, worked in Dallas for a few years, and was married at the time. And she's also an architect. So we were definitely doing the, architecture, day, night, weekend, all of our trips were architecture. A lot of our friends were. But Texas is sort of that way. Both of you guys know, quite a bit about sort of, Texans that you've met, through this adventure, and our architecture culture here is definitely quite unique, even though we're quite a big state. And I had the opportunity to teach a little bit while I was in school, and taught Design Studio, which is a story in and of itself. But I always sort of viewed architecture as one where I wanted to teach and practice and sort of have a foot in both worlds, not necessarily one or the other, but I liked the idea of both. I mean, you study architects and sort of study the practice of it, and that sort of resonated with me. It made sense. The people that we were studying in books and in seminars were doing that, and I wanted to kind of understand it better. And I think it really sort of fuels my creativity, and sort of works for me. So when I was in Dallas, what got me out of Dallas was an opportunity to teach full time. So my employer at the time, who I loved working for, still talk to, as a mentor, said, yeah, you definitely need to go take this, take it as a sabbatical, go teach, cause it's a short term contract. Yep. So I taught at Prairie View A&M. There's 8 accredited schools of architecture in Texas. At the time there were only 7, now there's 8. But Prairie View is a historically Black college. So it's an HBCU. And it's actually very, very close to Texas A&M. So I had friends who went to school there. And so I'd been to the campus and knew the program. It's decidedly a lot smaller than A&M's. A&M's is quite a large program, and Prairie View was quite small. But it was a great experience teaching. So I taught there full time for about 2 years. And then eventually worked for myself very, very briefly. And then moved to Austin. So that's sort of where I am now. And working in Austin has been quite a good experience. And as Kurt was referring, I think the biggest life change in that sort of practice thread was the, you know, of course, the recession. And so I was working at a firm. I was their lead designer, doing a lot of commercial and public projects in South Texas. Worked on a brand new city hall. You know, designed it, you know, carried it all the way through. So, you know, all these wonderful experiences at this firm, and then the recession hit us, and it was, you know, just a slow whittling away of a firm. And, you know, you realize that at some point, you know, it's, you're going to be the next one to go. And you're seeing colleagues and friends, you know, and that's what led me to sort of take a jump. Now I'm working with HA Architecture, and basically that was a situation where an engineer who had a company for quite a long time, it's sort of an interesting business model, they wanted to invest in their company by basically starting another division. And that's and they had worked with design architects early on in their career, and they thought that sort of creative outlet was a good parallel companion to their engineering business. They were doing mostly forensic engineering. And so that's where I came in, was basically let's invest in an architecture studio and start it from scratch. That's where I am today. And, you know, several years in and quite a good experience. But all the while, I'd say the one thing that neither Kurt or I mentioned in our origins, which I think is probably pretty relevant for both of us, is sort of involvement with AIA as well. You know, certainly for me, Texas A&M in school had a real strong connection to the AIA in practice in Texas. But then moving between several different cities, I think, you know, the AIA, you know, in Dallas and then in the Brazos chapter and then in Austin, you know, really kind of afforded me the opportunity to have colleagues and peers and sort of a little bit of a safety net to kind of get yourself started. And it's certainly proved to be pretty valuable, you know, working at the state level as well on chapters and committees and whatnot. You know, that led to some national opportunities, and that's actually how I ended up meeting Kurt.
How did that happen? Because you're on the opposite ends of the nation. One's pretty much as far north as you can go, and the other is pretty close to as far south as you can go.
That's exactly right. And it was several years ago now, there's the Young Architects Forum. Is our, you know, it's really not a member group, but it's this wonderful national committee, effectively, where you have, you know, individuals In some regions, they're elected, and sometimes they're appointed. You know, in my case, I was fortunate to be appointed by Texas. Texas is a single state region, and Michigan's a single state region. Mm-hmm. And so both Kurt and I met while we were representing our representative states on the Young Architects Forum, and then met quite a few other folks that you know through that same kind of adventure. And that's really where it you know, some of those opportunities presented themselves as well.
Yeah, the Young Architects Forum is a great place for young architects to get involved in the AIA early and to meet other people. If you are a young architect who sort of wants to get involved and not sure where, that's where you go. Go find your local chapter of the Young Architects Forum and go join that and get involved, because that'll take you to learn more about the AIA and to meet other people. And this is a perfect example of that happening here. And so you guys met each other there and built a relationship and a friendship. And so how long ago was that until you sort of decided that you wanted to do something together, partner up on a project here?
Well, let's see. Jamie did mention this several years, and I'm trying to count the year back, because I was on for two terms. So I think I started in 2013 through 16 or 15, whichever. Now I can't remember. And at some point, Jamie had one term, but when we met, we were there for a whole term each. But, you know, so 2 years worth of meetings and things like that. And it really kind of surprised me. It was just a fast friendship. We had a lot in common right away and just kind of stayed in touch. You know, with the Young Architects Forum, you only have one face-to-face meeting that's funded by AIA National. And then, you know, the other opportunities that you can try and get together informally, like at the conference or grassroots or other things like that.
So we've known each other about 5 years. I'd say at least 5 years now. And so what as Kurt was saying, as you realize where these opportunities are to kind of connect with the people that you want to see, conference was something that we always, you know, saw. So we've always coordinated our trips, room together, mm-hmm. And then collected other folks for dinners and, you know, different opportunities amongst that. But then, you know, we also would, you know, call each other, you know, quite a bit to sort of talk about some of the Young Architects Forum committees that we were on. Cause a lot of the work at National ends up not necessarily being related to your individual chapter. It's sort of a bigger, broader focus. You can kind of think about some bigger issues. And so you have you work with a collection of different folks. And both of us also, did some work on NCARB committees. And so some of that brought Kurt to Austin. So we would visit, you know, when he was here for that. Or we just sort of pull each other for some advice about our small farms that we were in.
I'd say that
continued for a while.
How much did social media play in that relationship?
Oh, well, you know, I'll admit I was not a very regular user until I met Jamie, who somehow natively can put together a tweet and a Instagram post and even connect his Facebook in there, which you don't use as much for certain things, but he fires these things off like super natively, and I was like totally impressed. But then I felt a little bit better when I saw him use an actual computer. I felt better about myself. But social media, I think, to be more serious, it was something that, you know, the YAF encouraged us to use in our own regions and kind of connect with the issues and sort of spread the word of various AIA issues for emerging professionals. And so I thought, okay, well, let me give this a try. So that's when I started kind of using Twitter more. And then, you know, that evolved into Instagram once we started talking about the visual aspects, sketching or buildings, or, you know, especially while visiting conference cities and things like that. And then it became a way for us to sort of, ping back and forth different ideas too. So I would, you know, tag him and then he would tag me back, and we kind of keeps that long distance relationship, I guess, a little more close.
Yeah.
For each other.
And we would it's sort of like dropping somebody a note, and then, you know, then you might catch up on the phone later, right. There's some delay in there, which is kind of good. But, Kurt is also, kind of peeling back the curtain. Kurt loves his technology, and more about his technological experiments. So I'd say the one version of the origin for our podcast, is that Kurt was on a kick of doing a video blog. And so about a year ago, he was sort of pursuing this kind of interesting idea that we had talked about, and he was asking me advice about, and he was pursuing it and in Flint and interviewing, as sort of a Flint architect, different folks in the community, Flint and Detroit, and sort of showing what he was seeing, but also talking to folks. And then there was sort of a moment where he's like, well, this isn't exactly how I thought it was going to be. And as we started talking through how it could evolve or how it could change, we realized that, wow, maybe there's this opportunity for us to do something together. Because at that point, we hadn't really talked about that per se as a collaboration. So at the New York conference for AIA, that was really where the impetus for some of this the idea, started.
Right. So that was a just over a year ago, right? So AIA New York was in June. We're recording this in late July. So about just over a year, you sort of discussed it, and the seed of the podcast started. We will be right back to our conversation after this quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect: Gusto, Arcat, and FreshBooks. If you own a business or know someone who does, you probably know that us small firm business owners, we wear a lot of hats. And some of those hats are totally great, but some, like filing taxes and running payroll, not so great. That's where Gusto comes in. Gusto makes payroll, taxes, and HR actually easy for small businesses. Fast, simple payroll processing, benefits, and simple management tools all in one place. Gusto automatically pays and files your federal, state, and local taxes so you don't have to worry about it. Plus, they make it easy to add on health benefits and even 401ks for your team. Those old school clunky payroll providers just weren't built for the way modern small businesses work, but Gusto is. So let Gusto wear one of your many hats. You have better things to do. Listeners to the Entree Architect podcast get 3 months free when they run their first payroll. Try a demo and see for yourself at entrearchitect.com/gusto. That's entrearchitect.com/GUSTO. The weather's beautiful, the pool is open, and the grill is on. It's summertime. And the last thing you want to do is to spend a long day in the office wrestling with broken files and archaic websites. Arcat, our friends at Arcat, can help you save time by putting all the building products you need in one powerful search engine. Arcat.com isn't just a list of products, however. They also host the product's technical data, like BIM and CAD files, for you to download and use for your project. And to top it all off, it's free. It's free to use as much as you want. You don't even need to register. No email, no anything. Just go there. You can download whatever you want as much as you want, and it's free. So stop watching the sun go down in the office trying to find the right information. Build better content with Arcat.com. That's Arcat, Arcat.com. Do you remember when you started your small firm? It was no small feat. It took lots of late nights, early mornings, and maybe even the occasional all-nighter. Bottom line, you've been busy, insanely busy, ever since. So why not make things a little bit easier? Well, our friends at FreshBooks have the solution. FreshBooks invoicing and accounting software is designed specifically for small business owners. It's simple, intuitive, and it keeps you way more organized than the dusty shoebox filled with crumpled receipts. Create and send professional-looking invoices in 30 seconds and then get them paid 2 times faster with automated online payments. File expenses even quicker and keep them perfectly organized for tax time. And the best part, FreshBooks grows alongside your business, so you'll always have the tools that you need when you need them without ever having to learn the ins and outs of accounting. Join the 24 million people who've used FreshBooks. Try it for free for 30 days. That's free for 30 days. No catch, no credit card. Free. 30 days. Visit EntreArchitect.com/FreshBooks. That's EntreArchitect.com/FreshBooks. And enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section to get started. Gusto, Arcat, and FreshBooks. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community.
So, but the podcast is called Coffee Sketch. So where did the podcast name come from?
Well, I mean, so Jamie has been, so his Instagram feed called Fallout Studio, not Coffee Sketch Podcast, but we couldn't grab that one right away. But, you know, Jamie's a super talent, and I can toot his horn, is that he's a super talented sketcher and very creative and very quick at sketching. And sort of the quickness is kind of the intent here is in a snapshot. He creates a sketch, anything that is, you know, inspiring him or on his mind. And then he has been curating his Instagram feed with it's not super staged, but there is a intent to kind of showcase the quickness of the sketch by putting a coffee cup and you know, his implement, a pen, a pencil, or a crayon, or anything that he uses to draw with.
Piece of charcoal out of the fireplace.
Charcoal, yeah, and. You know, and sort of hashtag it as Coffee Sketch. And so after last year's conference, summer, you know, we were talking and thinking about this idea of to collaborate together and do something creatively together. I was kept scrolling through his Instagram feed and I said, hey, what about this? What if we, you know, take your sketches and try and do a podcast that briefly, you know, podcasts are audible, so people can't really see the sketch being made, but we can talk about it. Because one of the things I was interested in being here in Flint is there is somewhat of a renaissance or a rebuilding going on in Flint, as well as Detroit, in a different scale. And there's a lot of buildings either getting demolished or getting replaced or renovated. And my half of the idea was that, like, I would try and document a building in visual form or verbal form. And I had this idea that was kind of called interviews with a building, right? Instead of people, buildings.
Yeah.
And then Jamie's his Instagram and his sketches was this really real-time feed. So, you know, daily sketches of buildings or figure drawing or art pieces. And so I said, well, what if we, you know, take half of each idea, put it together, and we could call it the Coffee Sketch Podcast, and we try and keep them short, which is something we're working on. We didn't realize we could talk so long about a couple of small sketches, but so I think that for me was, you know, said, hey, what about this idea? And then Jamie said, well, I think that could be interesting. And that's kind of, we roughly mapped out the first episode. And then we recorded it in March, somewhere around there.
March, yeah.
And then we were like, okay, well, let's try and like log a bunch of these before the upcoming AI conference so that it didn't look like we did one or two. And then we put, you know, and then we can go out there and kind of talk about it, you know, with friends and kind of do a little promotion because we didn't do any talking about it really until the conference. So that's my nutshell.
Yeah. And I think it's one where, you know, we knew that if we were going to do it, just like, you know, when people talk about blogs or writing or anything that, you know, requires sort of that effort and time. Is that we knew that if we didn't schedule it and be, you know, very deliberate about it, which Kurt, you know, to his credit, is very organized in that way. And then, you know, we're into episode 20 now, and it's really kind of they've evolved a little bit over time, but it's one where, you know, I have a lot of an interest in a lot of different types of art, and so that influences an aspect of it. You know, graffiti artist, you know, Shepard Fairey, you know, as a graphic designer, you know, all those types of things, you know, where, you know, the medium is the message. And so, you know, Coffee Sketch was literally born out of, you know, the last recession, and me starting the studio and collaborating with peers and, you know, talking to some friends, you know, when we talk a little bit about it on one of the episodes, but a friend of mine sort of joked with me, you know, as I was starting the studio with not a whole lot of work, was, well, Jamie, you know, you've always sketched every day. Why don't you just start posting some of these sketches to Instagram? And I said, well, what do you mean like this? And so I took a picture of the sketch I was doing at the table, and there happened to be a coffee cup there. And he said, yeah, exactly like that. And then it's, you know, I mean, that's, it sounds, you know, crazy, but that's literally how it started. And so after that, there's a couple, if you kind of go back way back in time, where, you know, the format changes a little bit about how I take the photo, but it's really kind of come back to that original idea. And as Kurt was saying, is, you know, I admire a lot of other people online, you know, and have gotten to talk to a few of them as well, who they show sketches in their sketchbook. And, you know, it's clear, you know, that they have a wonderful talent, but they're taking a lot of time doing those drawings, and they're doing, you know, they might do it in situ to start out with a sketch and sort of plan it out. And then they take a photograph and then they work on it, you know, over several different sessions afterwards in that sketchbook, you know, back at the studio, back at the Batcave. And that's great. And I love it and I enjoy those, but that's not what I'm doing. For me, it's more of a daily meditation and an opportunity to kind of clear my head, get some thoughts down on the page. Sometimes it's a project and sometimes it's just, I just need to think creatively. And this is the way I've always done it, you know, since I was a little kid.
How long do the sketches that you do take you?
I purposely try and limit the time. Mm-hmm. There's been the last series, this last week and a half, I've actually afforded myself a little bit more time. I'm up to about 25 minutes. But the ones that are the bulk of the ones that we've been talking about on the podcast are in the 10 to 15 minute range. And that's intentional. Sometimes I set an alarm for myself just in case I get totally engrossed. But it's one where I want the time limit. I want the artificial constraint.
Right.
You know, I want to, it's pencils down, you know, test is over. Because part of it is also, I just need to get on with the rest of my day.
Yeah. And it adds to the practice. Exactly. It allows you to do it every day because now you only, you don't need 3 weeks to finish it. And,
right.
And it allows you to say, okay, and you can look forward to it. And
right.
It only takes 15 to 20 minutes to do it. And you've accomplished something and you've created this ongoing project that allows you to not only be creative, but to share your creativity and inspire other people to do things like that.
Well, and it's sort of, you know, I joked, you know, one description was, you know, it's like people going to the gym, you know, you have a gym partner, you know, yeah. Somebody who's sort of, you know, your check. And for me, you know, with the sketches, because it's oftentimes me at a coffee shop or at home or at work, you know, for a few minutes, there really isn't that check. So the check ends up kind of coming in the form of me having to post it. And if I haven't posted it in a couple of days, people say, hey, is everything okay?
Right. That's right. There's some accountability built into
it. Yeah, exactly. Which I like. And I think it's good for me. And we've talked to, you know, Kurt and I've talked about it quite a bit is, you know, I'll try different techniques in the sketches, you know, to kind of push myself. And sometimes, you know, the sketch, you know, it doesn't come out the way I want it. And sometimes it's just not good, but I still post it, you know, or I try and work through it. And, you know, and as creative professionals, we know what that's sort of like too, is that, you know, some days you're not feeling it. And some days it's harder to come up with that solution or that extra option for a client. And, you know, but this I find is a way for me to sort of, you know, fine tune that, and get a little practice in without the, you know, without that kind of pressure.
Yeah. And so the podcast, you take one of your sketches and that becomes the seed of the conversation. So you start talking about that. And then I've noticed that very often you veer off into other discussions and continue way beyond the sketch, that it inspires the beginning of the conversation, but then it goes wherever you guys take it. And so what is that sort of the format of the show now, that it's a couple of friends who have this mutual interest in drawing and architecture, and you have something to start your conversation with, and then you have a conversation about wherever it goes?
I think so. So one of the things we wanted out of this is to keep it fun for both of us and not have it. We didn't want to start something that we would go, oh, I dread, you know, I'm going to dread recording this week. We wanted to make it fun. We're friends. We wanted to stay friends, and we didn't want it to be something that was going to be forced, right? We wanted to try and keep it as natural as possible. So what we have kind of settled on for the time being, at least, is, yeah, we're 1 to 2 sketches. We try not to do more than that. We realized that when it took a long, we were for a while, and then we chopped it in half and tried to, because we thought people would stop listening to us if that was the case. But you know, we joke all the time, like, it's like, you know, all 6 subscribers are going to stop subscribing. But yeah, so what we're trying to do is, you know, we the format of a podcast is audible, but so we're trying to plant the seed. We post the sketches on the website and iTunes. When you download, it should show as the sketch of the week, kind of.
It does.
And hey, it's working. the trick is working. And then we try and talk about and both of us having, sorry, I'm jumping around, but both of us having a little bit of a background with education. Jamie teaching in architecture, and I teach adjunct a little bit here at the University of Michigan Flint, in either art or kind of sustainability, depending on, because they don't have architecture. And so we talk about some of the techniques in the sketch. So going back to, like, you know, Studio 101, or, you know, some of the early drawing techniques, and use that as a little bit of a educational tool of describing, you know, how this sketch was made, especially in the short sketches. Some of our, I think my favorite conversations have been when Jamie intentionally did like a 2-minute, 5-minute, 10-minute sketch series, and the amount of information or architectural dialogue out of a 2-minute sketch was sometimes, you know, the most information comes out of the least information. I don't know how to explain it better than that.
Well, it was sort of, you know, it was our DIY kind of peel back the curtain moment in that episode. But I think, you know, we always try and do that. And one of the things, the reason why we talk about the art aspect of a lot is that, you know, as much as there's this sort of debate, which I'm not going to get into right now, about is architecture art or not, you know, because there's people who, you know, have that opinion, and that's a whole nother discussion for, you know, offline
for a coffee sketch podcast.
Yeah, episode. Yeah, we've talked about that, but But in reality, is one thing that I realized as I was posting these coffee sketches and sort of tagging a lot of architecture, and most of the sketches are architectural in nature. Whether they're me in a particular place drawing something that I'm seeing, or it's a project, or it's something else. The other aspect is that it's a lot of people who are not architects. I mean, it's really reached out to a very, very different kind of audience of people who are maybe illustrators or just enjoying the sketches, mm-hmm. In and of themselves as a static piece of art. And I like that. And so I think part of the thing that we've sort of morphed the podcast a little bit is, as much as two architects on the mic will tend to talk about architecture and architectural terms, we definitely want it approachable and accessible to a kind of a broader kind of cultural audience, where it's, we've had some episodes where we've talked about some travel in some different cities, and because we both have that opportunity at times to do that, whether it's a conference or vacation, it's a great chance to talk about a different place and sort of the experiences in that place, and that because that kind of gets folded into the discussion a little bit too. But and then the drawing techniques. I mean, it's, I'm definitely experimenting with them, and I've taught a lot of drawing courses. That's something I'll continue to do. But it's definitely something that I think can resonate with a different people on different levels, Yeah. So, and that's intentional on our part.
Yeah. I think sketching and drawing in general is one of the architect's superpower, that from the outside world, the non-architect world, when we sit down with a roll of trace and we pull out a pen and we start sketching, people are fascinated that we can do that. For us, we've been doing it our entire lives. And so it's not really that big of a deal. I mean, we hang out with other architects, they can do it too. But when you do it in front of someone who can't draw or think they can't draw, which is usually the case, they are fascinated. They really think that it's some magical power that we have. And we do, that if we can take an idea that's in our brains and transmit it to a piece of paper or translate it to a piece of paper through our hand and a pen, it is a superpower. Not everybody can do that. And it's really great that you have not only been doing it, but have been sharing it on social media and now taking it to the next level by talking about the process of doing it. It's a great show. I listen, I'm a subscriber, and I enjoy it. And I encourage others to subscribe to it and listen to it, because whether you're architects or not, it's an interesting conversation. Clearly you guys have a bond. You guys are friends. You can see that and hear that in the podcast. And so I would, I'd highly recommend people to go subscribe.
Thanks, Mark. We now have 7 subscribers.
Well, I've been a subscriber since the conference, 'cause I didn't know you guys were doing it. And then we met up at the conference. You guys started talking about it, and I didn't know that you guys were doing it. And so that night I went, I got to go find this podcast because you guys were talking about it and I didn't know anything about it.
We haven't necessarily been marketing it the way that's our, one of our, on our to-do list. Right, so we want to definitely share it with more folks.
Hopefully this will get you a few more subscribers, because it really is. It's a great half hour, 45 minutes of listening to two friends talk about something that many architects are really interested in. So
thanks.
Should definitely go do that. One more last question before I ask the final question that I ask everybody, but I wanted to know about, if other architects or anybody who's listening, but other architects specifically have a passion, or have an interest that they want to talk about. And they want to, maybe they're tinkering with the idea about putting together a podcast. What are your thoughts on that? Because it's not an easy thing to do. It's not something you just sort of speak into a mic and then push a button and it's done. There's a whole process to it. Is it worth it to you from your point of view to go through the process of doing it?
I think I'll start, because I'm the technical director. I don't air quotes. Self-appointed. When we started talking about this, then I started thinking about, figuring out what the method, how people are doing it. So I asked some people, like Evan Troxel from, speaking of internet friends, you know, Evan and I have been sharing a lot of ideas back and forth for a couple of years. And then I actually met him face to face this year at the conference, which, you know, surprised Jamie even, because he'd already met him a couple times before. But
if anybody doesn't know, Evan is one of the three co-hosts of the ArcaSpeak podcast, which is another podcast that you should subscribe to.
Yes. Thanks for adding that. And so I asked a few people like Evan about what some of the tools that are needed to produce this thing. And then also I asked Google and other things. And I actually, you know, there are podcasts about podcasting.
Yeah.
So I listened
quite
to
a few
those
of them.
Which is, you know, another thing altogether. And so I tried to find a very simple, again, trying to keep things simple and DIY and low budget. And I said, Jamie, you know, how about this? And here's our sort of level barrier of entry is sort of low, and here it is, and let's see what we can do. And I think, so my advice then for those who are interested in the idea is I think to get started is not super hard. I know there are, from where we are now, we could probably, you know, add more equipment and add more paying tools, you know, websites and web stuff and hosting and all that. You can definitely ramp up in the costs there, but to get started is not too crazy expensive, as I've found. I mean, we're making it work. And then I think the content, you know, is kind of, you know, for me and Jamie is keeping it fun and light and something that we enjoy talking about. So it's a natural. So if you feel like that is a natural, you have something that you naturally enjoy talking about, I say go for that. You know, don't necessarily overthink it or try and invent a niche, you know, that you want to try and go for, but go for something that you feel naturally inclined toward, and hopefully it is a niche. I think naturally the niche aren't in, right? Because I think that's how human nature is, right? Everybody is different and everybody has their own point of view. And I bet if somebody even started a coffee sketch podcast, you know, that is not Jamie or I, they would take it in a different direction,
right?
As well, naturally.
Right. Jamie, what's your thoughts on it?
Well, it's absolutely been worth doing. I mean, and it's something I think what, you know, the part for me is that it was, you know, Kurt had this really kind of interesting idea, and I think, you know, it really happened organically. And it was one where, you know, what I would say is sort of advice to others is from the standpoint of, you know, you have peers and friends who know what you do and know what you're good at or know what you're knowledgeable about. And I think you can lean on them for that kind of advice and sort of, you know, I have this idea and sort of, I think the sharing aspect of it and sort of being a little bit generous. You know, we talked about Evan, you know, being generous in sort of, you know, answering our questions and talking about some stuff with us, but there's plenty of folks like that, you know, and they aren't necessarily all just on the internet. You know, they're people that you work with or friends who aren't even architects. And I think that aspect of it, really got this going. I mean, it was something I'd always said to Kurt was, and I'd been asked this by others is, so what's next for Coffee Sketch? Like, what do you do next with it? Like, you do these sketches all the time. What are you going to do? And I often said, I'm not sure. I have a couple different ideas. And I was never, you know, kind of confident enough, you know, with any of them. And then when Kurt, you know, really had this great idea, it really made a lot of sense. And I think what we've done is now made it sort of our journey. And you know, in the podcast, and I think it's really kind of afforded us kind of that same opportunity to reconnect with some of those people who might have been, you know, giving us some advice early on. You know, what I've said about the sketches is I've actually done a CEU seminar on Coffee Sketch, only once. I'll probably do it again. It was a great experience, but it was sort of born out of the idea that, like you were describing, Mark, you know, it is sort of a superpower we have. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all trained this way. You know, whether you love the way you sketch or you don't, you have the skill to do it. You have the skill to translate that information in your head. And what I found with when I share my sketches and try and just, you know, here they are, hey, what do you think? Is a lot of folks say, you know, I really wish I sketched more, or I don't know why I stopped. And so I kind of developed this seminar where it sort of talks about some of the techniques I use, some of the neuroscience actually about drawing and memory. But it's also an opportunity for folks to kind of get out their sketchbook. And I actually had a bunch of architects in a room with, we joked about the Conte crayons and charcoal, is I brought in a bunch of paper and charcoal and forced them to do all their sketches with dirty charcoal. And while they took notes and listened to the CEU session, and it was really a lot of fun. But I think that's the bottom line for us, is the Coffee Sketch podcast and anybody who wants to do something like this, at the end of the day, it's got to be fun too.
Yeah. Yeah. That seminar would be a great paid course.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've had somebody sort of suggest
that. You should do that. Because there are people like we were talking about before. People think it's a superpower, but if you can teach them behind the scenes of that superpower, mm-hmm. and here's how I do it, reveal the superpower, like the magic trick, you know, reveal the magic trick. Right. Everybody wants to know how that magic trick was done. Well, here you go, you know, and you can charge for it and put it on, you know, Udemy or however you want to do it. And, you know, I think you could make it into a nice, you know, supplemental income product. Yeah.
Thanks for that tip.
Yeah. And you already developed it, you know, all you have to do is record it. All right. Let's get to the final question. What is one thing a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow? I'm going to start with Jamie.
I would say is set a coffee meeting at least once a week with someone that you do not know much about their business.
That's an excellent answer. Good job. And I would say
you can stretch that even further, is it might be a contact that's you haven't seen in a while. And I think that, you know, I think that reconnection, that sort of face-to-face short reconnection is very, very important. I try and remind myself to do that. And that's a good habit to have.
Yeah. And to make it a weekly or a monthly, however you want to do it, but a habit that you do as part of the routine on a regular basis. And maybe even like you were talking about limiting your sketches, limit the time. So when you invite somebody, say, I have this practice, I do it once a week or once a month. I want to have you come and we'll go get a cup of coffee. We limit it to a half hour. So we know at the end of the half hour, we both have 10 things to do. We're going to go, because a coffee could last 2 hours, you know,
exactly.
If you connect with the right friend or an interesting person that you haven't met before, you can easily spend the whole day sitting in a coffee shop talking. But if you make it intentional and set the expectation that this is a half hour meeting or an hour meeting, whatever you want to set it at, and say, okay, at the end of the hour, we're going to wrap things up. And if we want to do it again, we'll schedule another time to do it. We'll allow you to continue to do it on a weekly basis. That's a great idea. Mr. Nicewinder, what's your answer?
So I've been thinking about, I guess for me, my advice would be to never stop learning or never fear something new, because I work in a small office and I've worked in a variety of different size offices. And I think our profession is one where it should naturally encourage you to want to learn additional things. I think some of it is set up automatically, right? You know, codes change every 3 years. So you should be learning new the additional codes every year. But aside from those technical things, I think it's anything from new design software or new even productivity software thing. You know, nowadays with the advent of iPhone apps and Android apps and computer technology increasing so fast, is people are creating a lot of different new things that, you know, yes, some may not work for you and some do, because, you know, just the way your brain interacts with these technologies. But I would say don't be afraid of it. Speaking from personal experience, I know a few people in our profession that just kind of stopped. Right. They got to a certain point of technical skill level, you know, and they say, well, this is how I do things. And then I'm good. And I'm going to stop here and just do this for the rest of my career. But I don't think that, in my opinion, is the way to go in this profession as things are continuing to change. You know, the recession changed how firms are structured as far as how many people there are. You know, the firms are a lot smaller than they used to be, at least of anecdotal evidence that I've gathered around here in Michigan and, you know, going back to California. And so I think you should always try and keep learning. Otherwise, you may find yourself, you know, out on the outside looking in versus in, you know, being a part of it. And it's not to be a threat or anything like that, but I think, you know, what's worked for me, and I feel like I try and keep learning things like, well, you know, we decided to start this podcast. Well, I don't really know anything about recording remotely with somebody in Texas. What equipment do I need? What software do I need? You know, and I didn't fear it. I just started researching it and trying to figure out a method that could work for us. And as an example, you know, it didn't wind up being very hard. But there are things to learn, you know, and I think it's an example of how we, you know, something comes along our path, you know, you either the fight or flight, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. You know, some people will fight it, or well, I should say they would flight. They would run the other direction. And then maybe the fight aspect in this case is jump over the hurdle, right? Take that leap and learn.
Right. Yep. Yep. Jump off the cliff. Yeah. You know, if there's a challenge before you, just do it. Just go at it, and just accept that it's not going to be perfect, right?
Right.
You can just accept that it's going to be a crappy first draft, and then you learn a little bit more, and you learn a bit more, and you learn a little bit more, and get better at it, and get better at it, and in time you get good at it, and I think the same thing goes with learning new skills. I think many architects, especially in my generation, are afraid to maybe move from CAD to a BIM platform because they're afraid that it's going to take too much time, right? Mm-hmm. And so if the commitment is not, oh, I'm going to learn Revit, you know, that's a huge commitment. Maybe you chop it down to a baby step and you just make a commitment that every month you're going to learn a little piece of it, right? And you're just going to introduce yourself. You're going to read an article about it. You're going to watch a video about it. And then, but if you do it every week, you'll start to learn a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more, and it'll start building your knowledge on a regular basis, and eventually you'll be able to jump off the cliff and do it.
Yeah. I mean, one more, sorry, I just thought of another example is Jamie is a master of the physical sketch, the hand sketch. And something that I've been trying to pursue recently is a digital sketch in the sense of, using grasshopper, rhino and grasshopper, and the sort of, I intrigued by grasshopper as a, what they call like object oriented or, visual scripting, so that you can plug together these components, in grasshopper. And that's like a sketch, right? But it's not a hand sketch, but it's sort of sketching out an idea that then becomes architectural visualization in the Rhino software. And I'm terrible at it, but people like, again, Evan Troxell, who is director of digital practice at his firm, is super generous in sharing things with me as far as concepts, ideas, and some small scripts. And so I'm currently tinkering with that software, and I'm not yet ready to jump off the cliff and see if the parachute works, but you know, I'm trying, and I'm enjoying the process trying. I'm not tomorrow going to be doing everything in that software, but it's just part of, just something I'm interested in.
Yeah. But the commitment is to learn something new every week. Just one thing. And so if you learn a little bit more every week, you gain enough knowledge to know how to do it.
And not be afraid to fail at it too. Right. I mean, a little bit. I mean, you know, that's the, you know, we talked about Kurt with his sort of digital sketch, and you know, he realized, you know, as he's sort of describing some of this digital process to me and you know, printing something off and then sketching on top of it, I was like, Kurt, you realize I do that too. It's like, and that's the thing is that I think it's, you know, all of us sort of have our methods and what's, you know, when you start to peel back the curtain and start to share a little bit more, you know, as architects, if, you know, if all of us shared a little bit more about what we're doing, I think the community of architecture, you know, is better, you know, as a whole. I mean, you know, with both things, I think learning every day and not being afraid to learn, but then also sort of connecting with folks face to face and talking to them for a little while.
Yeah. 100% agree. 100% agree. I think sharing is one of the most important things as a profession that we should be doing is sharing our knowledge, because we all grow when we do that. There's no disadvantage to that at all. Even if they're a direct competitor, there's no disadvantage to that, because there's no secret weapon. There's no secret recipe. We're all doing the same thing. And when you share it and they share it, then the two of you just got much better at whatever you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. The podcast is called Coffee Sketch Podcast. You can subscribe to it anywhere you subscribe to podcasts. So if you're listening to this podcast, you can search for it. And you can subscribe to it right now. So go do that. On the web, they are coffeesketchpodcast.com. So go over there and check that out. And you can listen to everything that they're doing there as well. If you want to check out Jamie's sketches, it's at Fallout Studio. At Fallout Studio. Is that name because you started the firm during the recession?
No, that's the earlier incarnation of my firm, and it's become sort of a nom de plume for me. Yeah,
well, I like it. It's at Fallout Studio. Sketches on a daily basis.
Pretty good about the daily. Yeah,
pretty close to daily. Yep, it's a great feed to go follow. Kurt Nicewinder and Jamie Crawley. This has been a fantastic conversation. I really enjoyed hanging out with you guys for a little while. So thanks for coming here, inspiring a few of us, and sharing your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks. I appreciate it so much.
Yeah.
So if you liked this episode, this was episode 283. Share it. Share it with a friend. EntreeArchitect.com/episode283 is the link to share. And don't forget, go check out Entree Architect membership at entrearchitect.com/join. Every month, expert training, 60 minutes, in and out, back to work. Go check it out, entrearchitect.com/join. And if you're an entrepreneur architect who runs or owns your own small firm, then you, my friend, are an Entree Architect. And I encourage you to build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.